Yeah.
I mean, that's okay.
But yeah, I'm here with Jen Cannavale.
Hi.
A great stand-up comedian from Sydney.
Stop.
So good. I'm always... Well, I mean, we talked about this a lot because like, I think we had a couple of weeks where we were literally on every show, like either you were hosting or 100%. I was hosting.
100%. Yeah, yeah.
I think we've got another one next week.
Yes, the but, whole time.
Yeah, just always a pleasure. Always makes a good show. Good vibes.
Yeah, well, I mean, so when I came back, it was so weird because I had a few gigs and I was like, I know nobody. Yeah. And it does... It is not as enjoyable. And so then when you go and you like people and they're on with you, you're like, oh, this is like...
We can just have a nice time.
It's just... Well, because even if... The set is crap. There's something good out of it. Like you get to still hang out with people you like. Absolutely. You know, it's like...
Yeah, totally.
It's just a different... It's way better.
I always say... Like, I think I was talking to like a younger comedian. Like literally younger, but like she's sort of only just started.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, you're not going to make that much money out of this that you can justify it not being fun.
No.
Like it has to be... And that, I'd say the same thing about like when I was in punk and hardcore bands. I'm like... What, we're making $300 this show? It has to be fucking fun. You know what I mean?
I feel like that's with all the arts though, right?
Yeah,
for most people. Like I know people are like, oh, especially in Australia. And it is in Australia. But I feel like most places in the world, maybe like except Berlin or something, I don't know, or some like bizarre...
Berlin is like the epitome of like the art.
Yeah, they're like, we are art. But you know, like, I don't know, or Paris or something.
Sure.
For the most part, like you have to enjoy it because if you don't, you see when it turns and all of a sudden it's about money for comedians and then it's like...
Yeah.
It just changes the whole dynamic really quickly and not always for the better. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be paid.
No, but no, like, no, I know. Like it's kind of, there are some like really heartwarming stories. Like I really love this American comedian named Nate Bargatze.
Yeah.
And he's like a clean comic. He's got a Christian audience, that sort of stuff. But now he's one of the biggest comedians in the world.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, he's doing like I don't know if he's doing stadium size, but like he's doing big venues.
Laughing for Jesus.
Yeah,
sick. And
he's such a funny guy. Like he's a legit like New York comic who just happened to be also clean.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the audience that he attracted. And he's just made it work.
So I imagine like, there's a massive audience for... If you label yourself as like a Christian comedian in America.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's like, it just gives them permission to be like, oh, you're fine. You're like on our team. It's totally okay. You know?
Yeah.
Whereas most comedians are like, oh.
How long did you take a break from stand-up comedy for? Because I only met you after you came back.
I know. I'd only met you. Then.
I had seen your name. Just, I guess, on lineups and stuff, like on social media. So I knew your name but then you weren't doing comedy anymore.
No, and it's weird, because I'd seen your name, but I didn't have a place for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so I stopped when I had my first daughter, but she actually was born in March 2020, which is when Sydney went into lockdown.
Yeah, sure.
So it was during COVID.
Yeah, right.
So COVID kicked off as well as baby life kicked
off. Yeah,
and then COVID was just on and off for ages and we had another baby.
Yeah.
And then I came back after that. So it was like 2 and a bit years later.
Yeah, yeah.
And people were like, are you even interested anymore? And I was like, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's so sad, yes.
I love the bit you were doing when you first came back where you're like having to leave your daughters.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, but you're not funny.
Oh, yeah. That was so brutal. Our daughter was like, you're not funny. Daddy's not funny. Like,
oh, daddy's not funny either?
No one's funny.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, she's like a teenager in her 4-year-old's body, but he was like, because you try and talk to them in childlike language.
So
Chris was like, mummy's gonna make people laugh and see her friends, and she was like salty. She's like, you're not funny. Like you don't leave me to do this bullshit. Like stay, like I know what's funny and it ain't you, you know. It's like, and I was like, thank you so much. I feel so good about myself.
Because your partner, brutal. Chris, friend of the pod, Chris Keery.
Yeah.
He used to be a comedian as well. Did you guys kind of stop like when you had your
daughter? Like the plan, we talked about it. We were both like, Chris is a comic too. And we stopped when we were going to have Lily and we were like, we'll take 4 months off.
Yeah, right.
Seriously,
we were like,
we'll take 4 months off and then we'll go back incrementally. And then 3 months rolled around. It was like all the gigs stopped.
Yeah.
Everything stopped.
Yeah.
Gigs were like online, but they were kind of weird and most people weren't doing them. And then everyone didn't know what was happening. Because you got to remember the early days, we had no idea how long it was going to be.
Yeah.
So people were like...
Oh, in the early days, I was like, it's going to be 3 weeks.
Exactly. Well,
it's going to be 3 weeks.
I'm like such a nerd. I'm like, well, everyone will just do the right thing and then we'll be totally fine because we're on an island. So I think it'll be great. It was like years down the track, you know.
Yeah.
And so And then like now Chris has like picked up other things that he's like passionately interested
he's
in.
He's not super interested in coming back to.
No, I think he life. Is. Yeah, but okay. He's not like I think he is, but he's also just equally as interested in doing other stuff.
Yeah. And man, that must be so nice. God.
I know. Like, I remember talking to Broadbridge about this where I was like, if I could stop, yeah, like I would. And she was like, totally.
Yeah, I feel
you
the,
know what I mean?
I feel the same way. It's just like I do love it. I do love it.
I love
but
it
I
too.
Wish I loved other things equally. Because yeah. then that would split my interests.
Yeah,
you know?
Or yeah. I wish like, this is going to sound so unhealthy, but I'm sure it's a friggin' podcast about comedians and metal. but like, so I'm sure there's plenty of unhealthy people to discuss.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I feel like sometimes like I'm a better person if I've gigged that week in the sense that I've like let out the adrenaline yeah. or something. I don't yeah, know. Yeah, I'm like yeah. calmer. Even if the gig's shit, I'm like, oh, I feel like super more chill now.
Yeah.
It's not a great health. I'm sure a therapist would want to unpack it, but yeah, it is
funny to play with that. Like,
it's addictive.
That idea of like, yeah, you need like, fuck my friends. I need strangers to think I'm cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I mean.
Like, you've got friends. You've got people who love you surrounding you. But you need to go out and be like, make sure the people who don't know you also love you.
It becomes this unhealthy thing where it's like the people that you want, like the people that are your friends end up being comedians.
Yeah, totally.
And then if
yeah.
they don't laugh, it's like nothing. It's like everything's over. Like, I mean, nothing feels better than making like a comedian friend that you love yeah, who you think is hilarious yeah. laugh. You're
there's
like,
something. There's something.
Feels so good.
Yeah, it does feel really good.
You know,
I'm trying to get over that and be like, I don't care if other comedians think I'm funny or not, as long as the audience thinks I'm because like that.
Good
is,
luck with
I'm
that.
I'm trying to look at it. Like, I guess you'd say more professionally, and I'm like, oh, it's about the people who have like given up their night to be here
and who are going to buy a ticket and
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't play to the back of the room, right?
I'm trying to keep that, but yeah, it's addictive to make. Cool. The thing is, like, we've been doing this for however many years. We are the authority on what's funny.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why it means more to make a comedian laugh.
But like, also it can be skewed because some people see so much that they're only laughing at the most heinous.
Yeah, it's calm
dark.
Down brain.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. There's brain. Nothing yeah, left. Yeah,
absolutely.
To make you'll go yeah. to a movie where the entire audience is laughing at something and yeah. then you're just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I've seen it. Done.
Yeah, it's like, no, I know what happened there. That's bullshit. Yeah, you know, absolutely. Or it's like yeah. you see the method and you're not laughing. It's not great.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Totally. But you're loving it since you've been back?
Yeah.
Seems like it. It seems like you really enjoy it.
I do.
Which is great.
I like really I do.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. Even if it's shit. Like,
well, so,
it's
so many people
funny.
Are so, yeah, yeah. So many people are so cynical about it where they like, it's like, oh yeah, I do stand-up comedy and they like roll their eyes. I'm like, You don't have to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's plenty of other jobs.
You have to be a comedian. If
so when someone just like is just loving it like in the moment, I relate to that a lot. Like that's all I want.
Well, I find as well a lot of people who say that they do that, like they're like, I'm a comedian, they roll their eyes and they're like, you know. Yeah, but they gig like once a month or something.
Oh,
if
sure,
if
yeah.
that. And
yeah,
you're yeah. like, well, if you're not that into it and you're just doing it because there's not much else to your personality, maybe branch out. Do you yeah. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
my catch call is like, you can go work at a bank.
Yeah,
any minute
yeah.
you can go work at a bank
you can,
so easily.
Yeah, you like, can go do like a million jobs yeah. that are probably fulfilling if yeah. this one ain't it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love the fucking horrible... Can I swear? Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I've been holding them in...
I prefer it if you didn't. My dog's here.
I know. I'm so
he's
sorry.
He's only six.
Such a baby. I'm so sorry. Yeah, like I even like love it when it's a shit gig and everyone yeah. knows it is. It's hilarious. Or like everyone yeah. in the audience hates all the comedians. It's so funny because we all still march up. Like, it'll be me, I'll get him.
Oh,
and
man,
you don't,
I had that.
And it's like so funny because it's so
it's
bad.
So funny.
You know what I mean?
It is funny. Like, and I think you get to a point where I literally had this the other night where,
okay.
like, I'm not going to say the gig.
I'm dying. I want to know.
I'll tell you
like,
when the
yeah,
mic's off.
I
but it was
later.
One comic after the other. I might have said this to Jamie on the last episode, actually. So I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. But one comic after the other just eating absolute shit.
Yeah.
MC eating shit.
Nice.
Hot room, like one of those, you know, 35 degree days that we had like a few weeks ago.
Everyone's got heat stroke.
Everyone thinks this sucks. And then like comedians started, there was a guy in the front row and they started, like he must have kissed one comedian as a bit.
Oh.
And then every comedian that went up after, like they would just be bombing so bad that they'd be like, oh, can you give me a kiss? So everyone was getting a kiss from this guy.
Wow.
So I go up at the very end. I'm the last comic on this shit show.
Headliner.
Very last comic. They are over it. They have just seen 8 comedians
die in the
absolute
ass.
Fucking shit nice. For an hour and a half. I go up and I'm like, I'm pretty honest, especially like if it's like that, I'm like last on. I'm like, all right, I'm going to see how the good stuff goes. Because if I'm going to bomb with good stuff, I would rather just bomb with new.
You have to kind of call it. You have to be like, we all get what's happening.
So I was very, I was very straight up with them. I'm like, all right, this is a good joke. Absolutely ate shit. Got nothing out of them.
Okay.
Do some new ideas. Still nothing. I'm just not getting anything. And then like it must have been like maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then the comedians, they're all lined up in the hallway watching. And they start chanting kiss, kiss, kiss. I'm like, I just like lost it. And I just started ripping on them. I'm like, you can't bully me.
Yeah,
I just watched every single one of you come up one off the other and just eat shit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then... killing.
And now
all of a sudden I'm killing.
Yeah, they
because the audience is like, yeah, they did suck.
Yeah.
And look, it didn't feel good to throw my peers under the bus, but
they're okay.
They started it.
They're okay.
They fucking started it.
They're okay.
It is funny when you can, it's like so counterintuitive to be like, oh yeah, this show sucks and that's funny. And then the audience is like, yeah, this show does suck.
Some rooms.
And that is funny.
Yeah, they like it. I think they like some rooms, I think you can't do material in the traditional sense because it's so small and so intimate. Yeah. They're like, I want you to talk to me and I want it to feel real or improvised, which is why stuff like that fucking explodes.
Yeah,
because
they're
like, yes, like you're like this is like we know what's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
They know what's happening. And you said it, like it's such a relief.
Yeah.
Like it's so cathartic versus people being like, so I was on the bus the other day.
Yeah.
It's like 40 degrees. There's 10 people. You know what I mean? There's no lights.
We don't care if you're on the bus.
Yeah. They're like, what? Or they like deliver it like it's a stadium. And you're this is a lounge room.
It's an Al-Anon meeting.
It's always, it's always those spaces where you can't, like they're like, don't do material, which is so weird because it's like you paid for a ticket to a comedy show, but they want to feel like it's, all like off the cuff and unique and like an intimate conversation at a party.
Totally, almost,
where you're like making them laugh.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah.
People who go to comedy are such losers.
Also, please buy tickets to my Sydney Comedy Festival show.
No, I'm kidding. We love you. We need you.
Are you so pathetic. Are you doing anything at the festivals this year?
No,
do you want to plug anything? Or?
No, I have nothing to plug. My website's been like hacked by something I don't understand.
Okay, cool.
I have Instagram now.
Instagram? What's your Instagram?
It's jen.carnivali.
Cool. Easy.
Yes. I need to check, but I'm pretty sure what that's what it is. And I'm like enjoying Instagram. I like fought it for so long. I was like, I refuse to get another freaking thing. Like, I mean, obviously Twitter's a hellhole. But I've come around. I've joined. I've had to, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Well, I guess, just follow Jen and find out where she's at.
Find out where I'm at.
Yeah, yeah. Are you going to do anything for free?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I've got like a show that's coming together, but I don't want to just like pull a show together and charge people tickets for something I don't love.
I think we,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Night,
like I feel like there's this pressure where people are like, you got to do the hour, like just fill it or get someone to open or do. And I'm like, if people are going to go out and spend money, I'm not giving them filler material. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to like pull shit.
I feel
out
the
of
same way. I feel
the
absolute same
so
way.
So I'm working on a show, but until I love it, I'm not going to tour it.
I like that. I agree with you. I kind of give myself the deadline though.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like 100%.
Does that work for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I'm too organic.
A little bit. I'm like, it has to be good. I have to love it by this date.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of it. Yeah.
My brain, like, I don't even understand my brain most of the time, but I can't operate like that. Like, I'll try to like, it just has to happen organically.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then I'll like write something down, and if it works, it does. If it doesn't, I'm like, forget it ever happened.
I think I started doing that in bands. Actually, I remember like in the last band I ever did, which was not a punk or hardcore band, it was more like an indie rock band. But I just wanted to record something, so I talked to the guys. I'm like, I've booked in for this date. Let's just jam and record
and
what
create.
We've got.
Yeah, cool.
So like, we'll get it together. Whatever we've got by this date is what we're recording.
And
they
seemed
on board
go?
With that. I really like those songs, actually.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. That band, that was the last band I kind of ever
I was going to say, are you in a band?
Not now.
No.
This would have been 2018 at the absolute latest.
Do you miss being in a band?
Not really.
Really?
Not really, yeah.
It's so surprising because you're in bands for so long.
Yeah, well, that's it. I feel like I did everything I kind of wanted to do.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, every time I pick up a guitar, it's like, I don't know, like...
Wow.
Yeah.
Cold.
Yeah.
You're just done.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say cold, but I'm just I'm not like, I don't feel the need anymore. And that's something that comes up a lot, like on this podcast. It's like when I was in bands, it was because I needed to be in bands.
Yeah, I kind of get that.
And I don't feel that same need with comedy. It is much more of a desire than like a necessity with comedy.
Oh, cool.
Which is good because like something I'm kind of figuring out with this show is like, I don't want to get more out of me being on stage than you guys get from coming to the show. I want you guys to leave more fulfilled than
completely.
I really
need. Yeah. If the audience isn't having fun, you're like, fuck yeah. It's a bit weird.
You're talking about catharsis. Cause like, it's just like this weird like paradox. Cause like when I was in bands, it was all catharsis. And I had no like illusion. Like this was for me. This was for me to get out whatever.
Feeling, vibe, energy.
Yeah. Whereas with comedy, it's like, no, I do want, I'm only going to be happy if you're happy.
Yeah, okay.
Whereas like with especially with hardcore and metal, the metal bands I was in, it was kind of more like the more alienating we can make this performance, the better. Almost like the more challenging and the bigger barrier to entry on this band.
Yeah, that's also very like punky to be like, we don't want you to fucking like this.
Yeah, it was a bit of that. Yeah, a little bit.
Whereas with comedy, you can't really do that.
No, you can't. Like, I like what Kappa's doing. Like Kappa was on the podcast and he was like, I just want to do weird and off-putting shit. But I think he's smart enough where he's like, he invites you into a world rather than like pushing you away.
Also, that's him. That's what he's been like from day dot.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Absolutely, he's just honing who he is.
Yeah.
But he's always wanted people to come.
Yeah, exactly.
Like for the ride of the...
Exactly.
Like,
he wants you with him.
On the weird... Yeah,
he wants you to be weird and off-putting with him. He doesn't want to put you off. He wants us all to be on board with being disgusting.
There are like clowning shows and things I've seen where people are like...
It's more art.
Where they're like deliberately like pissing people off. Mm. But it is more like, it's more like arty.
An experiment.
Yeah.
Were you ever... So before we... Yeah. So actually, I'll intro the album and then I'll ask you some more questions. So
yeah, cool.
We're up to the year 1999. We're at the end of the decade. So for anyone listening, I'll put up another playlist with key tracks from every album that we looked at over the last 10 episodes. But today we're talking about the album 1999, We Are the Romans by the Seattle Tacoma band Botch.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Which was a huge, it was a huge album for me. I came to it maybe 6 years after it was actually released. So that would have been, around 2005, I got introduced to Botch, I think. And it just changed. It absolutely changed my life. I won't even lie. It completely changed everything. Because I already listened to the bands that were influenced by Botch. And then it was my girlfriend at the time put one of their songs on a mix CD. And I knew the name. I knew that because they're all in other bands now. So I knew that Botch was a band, but I'd never really investigated. And
it
was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, what the hell? Like, all my favorite bands are ripping off this band.
Okay.
Basically. What is your...
What song did she put on the...
It was called the first track, To Our Friends in the Great White North.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Which is a... We can get into it, but I kind of want to know what... Because Chris, your fiancé, he is really into this band.
He's so obsessed.
He loves this band.
When you sent it to me and you're like, when I heard it, I felt like I discovered something and I found it off the back of this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yes. And he was like so impassioned and excited about remembering when he discovered it.
Yeah,
he was like, it was fucking sick. Like he loved it. And he was like saying how from like finding that he found other bands and it just made sense and he became obsessed with it.
Yeah.
You guys are like a unique
anyone listening,
crew.
Jen is rolling her eyes right now.
No. I love music.
What is that's what I was about to ask. So what is your musical?
I do. Yeah. So
world
okay.
Look like?
Okay, so firstly, just like background, because I feel like it's important, because you grew up in punk bands, right? Like that was your thing when you were like teenager.
Yeah. I would say from high school, all the way to about 32.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
So punk band.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In high school, I was a ballerina.
Yeah. Cute. Okay.
Okay.
Nice.
And I was. To set the tone in terms of music, I'm sure there are some hardcore ballerinas, but I definitely wasn't one. But I was like, so music I was listening to was like, or music I loved and still like, you know, it's not one box.
No.
But like, I loved 90s R&B. Yep, I loved rap. I loved...
We're about the same age, aren't we? I was born 85.
Yeah, 84.
84, yeah. Cool. Yep.
I loved like Dog Pound and all of that when I was younger. Yeah. And like cheesy poppy R&B. But then I also liked 70s stuff. Like Mamas and the Papas I really liked. Cool. Yeah.
When you were in high school, you liked that stuff?
I liked Mamas and the Papas and stuff when I was in high school.
Yeah, cool. So was that from your parents?
That was probably from my mum.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
My dad was more like Billy Joel and like Roy Orbison stuff, which I also liked.
It took me so long to get, I fucking love Billy Joel.
I love Billy Joel.
But it took me so long to get into him. Like I had to understand where he came from. I had to understand like the Long Island,
I feel like
New York City of it all.
Hated him. Like people hate him. And I love Billy Joel.
Yeah, he's
like,
the best, man.
I love Billy Joel. And then I also liked, like whatever my sisters liked, which was like Janet Jackson, TLC, Boys to Men, because they were listening to it and they loved it. But then
These feel like probably wasn't so fresh when we were in high school, but like those chart compilation CDs.
Yeah,
that's
kind
how,
of. Yeah,
that was our taste
like
in music.
Super. Yeah, and then also like because I did dance, so like whatever like the dance teachers were playing, which a lot of the time you'd be doing hip hop, and so they'd be playing. Cool. You'd be like dancing to like TLC or something. So you were like, "This is sick!"
That
like,
era of R&B that was and like, hip hop is so like the sound of it is so like. I don't know, like you hear one of the, like I hear Waterfalls by
it's
TLC.
It's super just,
It's like an MK Ultra, like active, like my eyes roll back. I'm
like. Yeah, it's like, so it was all of that stuff. And then I also like super like poppy stuff. Like I love Tegan and Sarah.
Yep.
At the moment, I love this really folky.
We all love Tegan and Sarah.
Oh my God, I love Tegan and Sarah so much. They're the best. And then I don't know if Chris does because I play them a lot. And then I also like at the moment this guy who's super folky called Noah Kahan.
Oh, okay, I haven't listened to him.
He's like an American who...
I'll check that out. I like folk music.
Folky kind of country. Cool. I love the Dead South. We're going to see them soon,
okay, nice.
Which is super country.
Dead South, that's not... that's Dead Weather is Jack White, right?
Yeah.
What's the... I think I've heard the Dead South.
Okay. They have... In Hell, I'll Be Good Companies, probably one of their most popular ones.
Nice.
Or Banjo...
So you're a country girl?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Well, I'll give you a hot tip.
Okay.
Because...
Not all the time, though. Yeah.
Brian Cook, the bassist from Botch... has done a couple of sort of alt country projects.
Oh, wow.
So he has a band called Roy that I fucking love.
Okay.
Roy are great. One of their records is on Spotify.
Ah, Roy.
Roy. They're
Maybe
just called
I'll
Roy.
Like, save it for later. Yeah.
And then he recently did another one, which is a bit more like experimental noise, but it's still like quite soft. Like it's almost like country shoegaze.
Okay, is this like country, or is this like...
Roy is closer to...
Yeah, I like how you said closer. I'm like, is it country?
It's a bit like more indie rock, but it's definitely got like that country sort of
influence. Okay, so the album's called Roy, and it's by...
No, the band is called Roy.
I mean, the band is called Roy, and the album's called... Oh, it doesn't matter, I'll find it later. sorry, I got distracted.
You might like it, yeah. And then he did one recently, which was like a COVID project... I think it's called Torment and Glory.
Okay, cool.
Which sounds brutal, but it is like, it's pretty,
tame.
It's a bit of experimental, but it's like acoustic and like ambient, I would say.
Okay, cool. So I'm like hesitant because when I listen to this, you're like, there's jazzy undertones, there's this and this and this. And like Chris hears it. Like when I listen to the band, he's like, yeah, there's like some melodic, you know, like beautiful bits and there's some bits inspired by this and this. And then I'm listening to it and I'm like, fuck, my ears are different to your ears.
Like, so nothing, I think that's very common. Like nothing stood out to you on this record.
No, I did. Okay, so I listened to it. I listened to it incrementally, and I listened to it in different settings.
I'm so sorry, Jen.
No. I did it on purpose, and I did it in different settings because sometimes I think you take in music differently.
Yeah.
What? Right? Like,
I take it in way better in the car.
Okay, like when you're driving.
Yeah,
so
I get more out of it. Yeah.
I listened a little bit when I was driving, but to be honest, I listened when I was like lying down on the couch, just chilling out on my phone, and then I was like cleaning the house, and then one time I went for a walk.
Okay.
And I wrote down one of the songs that I liked. I liked Vietnam, surprisingly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is on that album. And I liked, where is it?
It might have gone, because Vietnam.
Vietnam. What did I say?
Vietnam. Well, You said Vietnam, which is the proper word.
Okay.
Because that one's from the EP that came after this.
Oh, I listened to the whole thing then.
You listened
maybe.
To all their...
I kept listening.
Oh, really?
Okay, yeah, crazy. Cool. All right. Is Thank God for the Worker Bees on the right album?
I think liked that. Was like, yeah, that was like a secret track on it.
So
yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah, okay, cool. As well. Yeah. It was like a remix of a track from their first record.
Okay.
Or something.
I thought was that like was really cool. Track.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But everything else that came before it.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Did you really?
Yeah, like, I'm not going to lie. I'm, like, so sensitive to music and to everything.
Yeah,
I'm a sensitive soul.
Yeah.
So, like, when I want to chill out, I'll listen to, like, indie folky stuff. And I'm clearly affected by music because I put it on the first day when I was stressed and I was like, this might help me release my stress.
Yeah.
Let it out. And instead, I listened for like 5 minutes. I was like, I want to fucking kill someone. So I had to like turn it off because it was like amping me up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and then like, yeah, anyway. So, but I did enjoy it. I enjoyed listening to it. Would I listen to it all the time or like to fall asleep? Like I know you guys do. Like, no.
I do not listen to this.
I know you guys do. I've heard Chris do it. Chris is like, it's relaxing. I'm like, it is not.
I don't find anything relaxing about it.
I don't find it relaxing.
I think I actually relate to your like the tension build of it less because of how noisy it is, but more because of how repetitive it is.
So do you find it... Does it trigger emotion in you or are you listening to it as a muso who's analyzing the music? Because I know some musos hear music and like a comedian, they're just like analyzing it the whole time.
It doesn't trigger emotion in me anymore, really.
Wow.
But when I first heard it, it definitely did.
Really? It's so intense. To me, it's so intense. Maybe it's because you have a more wide...
I think my views on music have... Because like I said, I first heard this in 2005, so 20 years ago. I think just my philosophy on music has changed a lot.
Yeah.
So like not many songs like make me emotional, make me cry, but there's one song I can think of in my like listening library that sort of like makes me emotional. It's like essentially just a pop song by this girl named Taurus.
Okay.
The song's called Hug from a Dinosaur. Sounds like Liz Phair.
Super cute name for the
song. Yeah. And it's like, it is literally a pop song. Verse, chorus. But there's something about it. There's like this kind of like fucking transition part that happens. And there's something about, because like songs about like her girlfriend who's an artist and she won't stop painting. So Taurus, like the singer, brings her lunch every day because she can't stop working. And there's something about it. Something hits and it just like hits me like in the gut.
No. That's
but
so
it's like
nice.
it's not intense, it's not super it's sad or anything. Like, it's literally just a pop song, and there's something about that that like hits me in the gut.
I can get affected by anything.
Yeah.
You said it almost made you cry. I didn't cry listening to
this, which I feel like for me
was an achievement because it is intense.
Well, I'll give you some context on it, like some cultural context on it. So like the reason I wanted to do this is where to start? To me, looking back, like Botch seem like a band that is separate to what you would traditionally call like hardcore.
Okay.
Like they're still heavy music, they're still extreme music, but there's something about them that kind of puts them outside of the scene. But I think it's more because of the nature of the scene in the Pacific Northwest of America.
Okay.
It seemed like in New York and in LA, you had these like very discreet hardcore scenes where like these are the bands that are hardcore, this is the scene, these are the clear boundaries, whereas in the Pacific Northwest it seemed like all the individual people who are in these bands like kind of floated between genres, and it was like less, it was really like
less rigid.
So David Knudsen, the guitarist and like main songwriter, he went on to be in a band called Minus the Bear, who are like soft rock.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Like soft indie rock, like still experimental, like lots of guitar pedals.
No, but
lots
that's
of
really cool though.
On.
That they're just like you listen to this, and then you're like, he did soft rock, and you're like, how does his brain?
But then like all their like peers had similar trajectories,
right?
Basically, so like they'd be playing with these hardcore bands, then a few years later, those guys would be in an indie rock band.
Yeah, right.
So they just kind of like the borders were like way less structured.
But that's way better, isn't it? In terms of creativity. I think so.
It reminds me of Brisbane. It reminds me of the Brisbane scene that I was in.
Yeah, honestly, cool.
Because people just wanted to do different types of music and we didn't necessarily see ourselves as like, oh, I'm a hardcore guy.
I think that's way more freeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like way more creatively interesting.
Yeah. So because of that, they were a little bit shunned by the hardcore scene, even though they kind of came out of it because they were actively working against it. And so yeah, the backlash, I don't know if backlash is the right word, but like...
Or just like pushback, like gentle pushback?
Yeah. They just didn't... I don't think they meshed with like what you'd consider traditional hardcore bands. They didn't tour with them. Like they toured with like this new wave.
Yeah, they did their own thing.
Absolutely just did their own thing.
Outside.
Yeah. The term that was used to describe them, and no one knows where this came from, if it was the band themselves or if it was some review from the time, instead of calling them hardcore or mathcore or noisecore or anything like that, the term that got ascribed to them was evil math rock.
Evil math rock. Evil
math
rock. Cool.
Which I think is a reference to more like indie rock bands, which are still like, I guess like have like one foot in the punk scene. Like Drive Like Jehu or Shellac. I don't know if these names mean anything.
Nothing.
Do you know the Jesus Lizard?
No.
So yeah, just like still abrasive music, but definitely not like screamy, yelly, stage dive sort of thing. Like a very different scene to what you'd...
If that was a review, that's fucking cool.
It's pretty
like
funny.
You could get that like on a t-shirt. Like that's sick. That's really sick. Yeah.
No, but they deliberately tried to separate themselves. Like some of the merch that I used to have, they had this like baby blue shirt.
Yeah,
with,
right.
Like a Tom of Finland picture on it. Okay. Like just this guy like in a sailor outfit, but with his sailor hat with his shirt off. And just said Botch, the best boy band ever.
Yeah.
So like they were like deliberately
being
trolling.
A bit antagonistic.
But it's because like Brian Cook, who's still doing like heavy bands today, is a gay man. But I think like in 1999 to be a gay man in the heavy music scene would have been pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Like, so instead of being shy about it, I think, he just literally like... Yeah.
In your face. You got to be, especially if you're fucking playing that. God, you're more masculine than like, you know, it's like, it's so funny when people tie in like sexuality to masculinity.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? That's sick. I kind of want one of those t-shirts.
I used to have, I don't know where it is anymore, but so this record specifically, I think like what you're saying about Chris, like still loving it, that is really emblematic of this record. Like it's over 20 years old now.
Yeah.
And it's still like so talked about and it's so...
Well, he was pumped when you mentioned they're touring.
Yeah.
He was like sick.
Australia. I forgot all about that.
Which a lot of people that you listen to 20 years ago, even if you're you're passionate about it, you're like super excited, you're like super into it.
Yeah.
20 years later doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be like, fuck yeah, they're touring.
Yeah.
Whereas he was like, oh shit, I'm going.
I think they're just so unique and it remains so unique. If not in sound, at least in the feel of it, that like...
Yeah, it's like they maintained that quality discovering something unique and exciting. It's they still have that.
Yeah. There's definitely
which is
a mythology.
Pretty cool.
There's a mystique to it because they much like Refused, who was the band that we talked about last week, they broke up so soon after this record.
Yeah.
They broke up like, I think within 2 or 3 years of releasing this record just because they couldn't write a third record.
Yeah,
they were just like butting heads and like, internal fighting. But like the reason I think it's remained sort of in the consciousness.
I know what you mean, yeah.
thanks,
Jen. Yeah, I knew what you...
it's like internet nerds, like Reddit, seen message boards, all that sort of stuff. But I think it's because they continued to do other bands.
Yeah, they carried on playing other music and like...
So the guitarist went on and did Minus the Bear. Brian Cook, the bass player, he's in Russian Circles, who are a huge like post-metal band now, like touring all the time. Even earlier than that, he did a band called These Arms Are Snakes, who are like an indie rock sort of weird screamo crossover type band. They're great. I really like These Arms Are Snakes. Very, really cool. And then the singer Dave Varell, he's done a bunch of sort of like side projects in the meantime as well. So like, you always get these new albums coming out, and the sticker on the front when you go into JB Hi-Fi would be like featuring members of Botch.
Yeah, who's that?
Yeah, just like if you're a nerd about it.
Yeah, they're constantly being discovered again.
Yeah, yeah.
As something exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
20 years later.
And I think it's like, I say this a lot, but like sometimes when people tell you to go back, oh, you have to go back and listen to this old band, it feels like homework. But with this one, I think, again, it's like this mystique or this like mythology about them. It did feel special. It felt like you were discovering something, because like listening to, I've got a quote here, which kind of says what I'm trying to say way better than I can. They gained cult status by the mid-aughts as being foundational to noisecore or mathcore.
Yeah,
which
right.
was like by that time was like a pretty established genre. There were all these bands that were quite popular. Bands like Converge who did come before, but I don't know, like there's sort of like a back and forth of ideas there. But also like Every Time I Die, bands like Coalesce and Dillinger Escape Plan, they kind of, I know these names mean nothing to you.
No,
sorry.
I know. But Converge, because Chris is obsessed bands. And Dillinger Escape.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Now
they,
as well.
They ran with
I
the genre.
I know two.
No, I feel bad just for rattling off like no, gibberish.
No. To be honest, you'll mention one and I'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard that.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah. But yeah. Yeah.
But these are bands that ran with the
I've
genre.
I've seen that and, t-shirt.
And yeah. like gained notoriety after Botch broke up, and then sort of they owe a debt of gratitude, I think, to what Botch did with this record.
Because yeah.
it was just like, it's not that like they created this genre, but I think they really solidified it with this album. Like the
well,
sound
they did
of
it,
it
so,
so
well that yeah. it's like this is the foundation of it now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it's
yeah,
not like
yeah.
people were like, oh, I get where they're trying to go, and I'm going to yeah. try and keep going with it to push it further. It's yeah, like they yeah. did it.
What I find interesting is like they talk about having influences like those indie rock bands I was saying, like Drive Like Jehu and stuff like that, which I can hear absolutely, because I was a big fan of those bands as well. But it's interesting to think of like how they got there. But historically, it kind of makes sense to me, because like this is another quote I found. If 1992, like the cliche is like 1992 is the year that punk broke. You know, that's like Nirvana got big.
Yeah,
all that
yeah.
sort of stuff.
Everyone was just like, ah.
Which means the years that came after was when it got weird or weirder.
Yeah.
And that's a quote from writer Robert Newsom. And that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of hardcore bands were trying to really push out, like,
yeah, also
and just deliberately get weird.
But yeah. like you said, if they already felt like they were not on the outside to begin with, but not in the click of things,
yeah, yeah.
the freedom that you get. And then the push you get to be like, well, you think we're different. We'll fucking show
yeah,
you. Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
exactly,
like,
yeah,
especially
yeah.
with the nature of that type of music, yeah. it's like you're either sticking to it or you're like, we yeah. don't want to be close to that, because then
yeah.
you don't want to seem like a shit version of what exists. So
yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Like, we're going to stamp out what we want to create,
yeah.
you know, yeah. in like such a way that you can't deny it, or that it's like so unmistakably
yeah.
unique and like, and they clearly did it so freaking well
yeah.
that
yeah.
it wasn't like, oh, that's just a shit version of like...
Yeah, it's this weird thing, and you see with a lot of these 90s bands where it's like, oh, we're indebted to this hardcore scene, but we don't want to stay in it, kind of thing, which is interesting, because they formed this band when they were all still in high school.
Oh, whoa!
Yeah, so they were really young.
That's
that was
crazy.
That was 93.
Yeah,
they were
wow.
in high school, and then yeah, 6 years later they released this, so they were like early 20s.
They're young.
Yeah,
they're
like- yeah, super young. And I couldn't find the interview, but I had read it. It might have been on their like final show DVD or something that I used to have. But like they talk about, there was a Seattle hardcore band called Undertow who are kind of like what you would consider like the traditional cultural
yeah, like
hardcore
super
band.
Yeah, yeah, like down but, the line yeah. like that's a hardcore
yeah,
band.
Yeah, yeah. But the singer was John Pettibone, that was his name, and he went on to do like. He did like kind of a gothic metalcore band called Himser, and then he's gone on to do more like sludgy experimental, more metal in the metal world
yeah,
after
cool.
that. So this is a guy as well who wanted to branch out
from just
the prescriptive
doing...
scene. Yeah, yeah. But they loved Undertow, and they became friends with him, and he became their tour manager and stuff as time went on and stuff like that. So I think that's where their roots... That's what I would trace back and be like, oh, this band has roots in the hardcore scene, and then they just sort of... They didn't let it hobble them. Like, they didn't let it be like, oh, well, we can only do this sort of thing. They were like, no, let's just, we all like different types of music. Like, the drummer was a jazz drummer.
Yeah, I love that.
The guitarist was a classically trained guitarist. Like, Brian Cook, the bass player, he was like the one, like, I'm a punk guy. I want to do a Dead Kennedys cover.
Yeah. I love that when you find out they're like classically trained and stuff like that. It's sick.
I hate
bringing shit back to comedy, but that's all I have. That or motherhood. And I know people who love metal love motherhood. So I know they love it. But I was gonna say it's like for. Like, what I would compare it to is like when you see a comedian, and this is so shitty to compare, but this is how my brain works.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, they're doing a shit version of like someone that they love. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because they've seen it and they're like, that's alt comedy or that's whatever. They're like, you can tell, like, it can be the most obscure comedian or the most famous comedian. You're like, hey, they're a fan. They get up, they do 5 minutes, and you're like, they're a fan of Eddie Pepitone.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But,
yeah,
and they're doing a shit version. Of Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah. But we all have to do a shit version of Eddie Pepitone to start
get,
with.
Right, yeah. To like get, and then you see people get up and you're like, fuck, that's so cool, and that's so them, and they've figured it out, and they've taken influences, but they're just like in their own skin and they own it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And there's something like freaking awesome about it, because when you watch them, you feel like you've discovered something. Like if you see a new comic and they get up and they've got their own voice, or lack of a better word, and you're like, that is so exciting to see.
I'm like, oh, I have to kill him.
Yeah.
He's going to overtake me.
Yeah. I'll never forget when I met Jackie Loeb, who's like an older, she'd love that I said that, female comedian. And I was like super young, like in my 20s. I was like, how do you be a female comedian? She's like, we don't need more. Don't start. And I was like,
full step.
Okay,
mode.
Cool. Yeah. I was like, thank you for your support. But I feel like that's the same as with a band where you're like, no one's doing that. You're not ripping anyone off. Like the excitement of discovering that unique voice. You're like, oh my God, I want more.
It is
like, it's so cool.
Yeah. It is. They are super cool. That's exactly how I felt. When
It's like, and there's no like undertones of, oh, that sounds like so-and-so or that's like, it's just really cool feeling.
Yeah.
And it's
absolutely.
Like a really addictive feeling, which is why you like binge the album.
Or you know, totally. Like,
I will say I enjoyed listening to them lying down on the couch.
Yeah.
Just chilling out, which I don't know what that says about me.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed that more than like trying to like not get emotive about, but like trying to like, I don't know. I enjoyed it like as like chill out music.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to me because like you think about this. I'll finish because I've got another quote from Brian Cook.
Oh, sorry.
No. I'll just
distracted.
just because I'm not just like making conjecture. Like this is a quote from him. He says, "We were trying to push hardcore forward because that's what all our favorite hardcore bands had done. And at that point, I feel like we began to split off from the scene. And it's not because we felt like we were above hardcore. It's just that we wanted to do whatever the hell we wanted to do, which is exactly what you just said. And it's interesting that you can hear that come through.
Yeah. Which is so cool.
Yeah.
Because you're like, it's just an exciting feeling when you discover that stuff.
There's two things that kind of, well, there's one thing that bothers me about it is like the way this record is written about in retrospects and reviews and stuff like that. And it kind of grates on me because it's like, this is thinking man's hardcore. This is for smart people.
Oh.
And all other hardcore is for dumbasses and Neanderthals. And I'm like, I don't like that.
You feel like it's a little bit.
Because like everything, I mean, there's bad music. I'm not saying there's not bad music. But to say that, especially doing this fucking podcast and we've like covered two decades, is like there's just so much richness in the culture.
Yeah.
And it's like to be like, oh, well, Botch were actually the smart band. And it's like,
yeah,
they were obviously very smart. Like the song structures and the way they played their instruments is so technically complex and like interesting. And it was new.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it wasn't new, but to say it's smarter than someone who just wants to write a 3-chord pop song and express their emotions is like, there's an emotional intelligence
to
those
like
sorts of bands as well.
People love putting status onto music.
Absolutely. Yeah,
straight away. Like
well, they do it with comedy as
oh,
well.
Oh, with comedy too, but it's, smart comedy. Nothing
comedy.
Irritates me more than comedy for smart people.
Oh,
right. Yeah. Smart people only laugh at that.
People
because
be
that's
like,
only funny for people with an IQ.
Yeah.
Over a certain amount or like fucking
so
savants.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
what
yeah,
are you
yeah.
talking
yeah,
about?
Well, yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
shits me to tears. Yeah. It's like, no, funny's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like good music. Farts are funny. Farts are hilarious.
I'm a smart person. Yeah. I still think farts are funny.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. People love throwing status onto music. Like, yeah. I mean, even when I was telling you music that I've listened to or that I liked when I was younger, I'm trying to think now of other bands, but like you could tell people and they'd be like, wow, really? You know, or like if you say you like, Chris has a good mate who loves folk and I didn't know and I like folky things too. It's like super cool.
Yeah.
I would never have picked it and I'm like, he's never talked about it. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I don't know. He's like quiet about it because you tell people and they're like, folk. Okay.
Yeah, okay. I get that a lot.
It's like the it vibe feels like of a like, hard sell. Okay. And then it's within every genre as well. Like you were saying, it's like, it's for smart people.
Yeah, yeah.
It's for intellectual. It's like, no, it's art and it's just digested.
Take it or leave it.
However people like, want to. Like
literally,
A child can enjoy music and a 9-year old. Like it's got nothing to do, you know?
Yeah.
It's so dumb. Like
it is dumb because like, I that's the other thing. Like, I mean, obviously, if you're just having a conversation with friends, it's different. But like from a critical point of view, like if you're actually trying to have an opinion, when someone's like, oh, it just wasn't for me, I'm like, well, it is. It exists in the world. It is for you. It's, and you're allowed to dislike it. You're allowed to say,
of course,
I think this is bad.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, like I said, when I was in a bad mood and I first listened to it, and if that was my only engagement with it, I would be like, I hate this.
Yeah.
But I've like listened to it in different ways and I'm like, oh, like it was really chill or I liked this song or, you know, but I think it's just because there's so much status attached to that. I couldn't hate it more. I hate when people do that with music.
Yeah,
it just shits me to tears.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
absolutely, yeah. The other thing that I took, like, just putting this episode together and stuff was, like, so you've got, like, all the noisy, crazy guitar work, like, very heavy moments in this record.
Very heavy.
But then there's a lot of ambience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, the dynamics of it are all the way through. But then there's these long, protracted, kind of melodic... Whether it's heavy or whether it's like quiet is beside the point. But like in that song, the song See Thomas Howell as the soul man, it's like a 4 or 5 minute song. It's only really the first 2 minutes that are like crazy heavy, fast, fast, fast. And then it goes into this really long atmospheric.
Super atmospheric.
Yeah.
So I keep talking about my boyfriend, which is still name, but he loves
your fiance.
My fiance. Oh yeah.
Sorry, if I said my girlfriend and Bianca was here, she's like, I'm not your girlfriend.
No, we're both enfianced. I forgot. I keep forgetting. It's been a while. But like he loves that song.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, when people say, when you like listen to an album, like if you send it to me and you're like, by the way, track 3 is my favorite.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So I was like listening to it and it is, it's incredibly atmospheric.
Yeah.
But it felt to me, because I'm not used to this type of music, like two separate songs almost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the feeling changed so dramatically that I was like, I like looked on the thing, like I was like, has it changed? And I was like, oh, it's the same, you know.
Yeah.
And then there was another song which I'm like embarrassed to say this because I have such shit, whatever I'm just going to say. Reminded me almost of like choir music at one point with some of the...
Well, there's
it
a
was,
song.
It was just really interesting.
Yeah, there's an instrumental song. I think my favorite song on it is probably the instrumental song, which is like Swimming the Channel. Swimming the Channel versus Driving the Channel, I think.
Okay.
It's just like a very melodic guitar line that just sort of repeats. But it's so... ominous is the wrong word, but it just like that's probably the one that I feel the most. Like,
oh, okay, cool. Feeling. Yeah.
It's just like this. It's very beautiful, but it's still very dark.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like right in the middle of the record and I'm just like... Yeah, there's just something about it. There's something about his guitar playing. And
again, this could be speaking to like my naivety towards this type of music.
Your
naivete? My naivete. Or like the statusy stuff. But I was surprised as well at like the change in tone so dramatically.
The dynamics are insane. Like it's just so like absolute quiet to absolute
mayhem. I don't know what I thought, okay? But I have listened to music like, you know, like hardcore music with Chris before or like whatever. Yeah. And I was surprised at how, like, it shifted, in my opinion, very dramatically, like, a lot. And it was great.
Yeah,
like, I enjoyed it because it kind of caught me off guard and made me, like, listen more, or, like, tune into it more than I was.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because it felt, like, unpredictable and, like, it's... I understand how, if you were already listening to that music, it was very... you know, like you want to know what's happening next. Like you want to listen to the next track because you're like, well, what are we going to get now? Is it going to be instrumental and it's going to be really slow, or is it going to be like a bit more energetic, or is it going to be like, I just didn't know from track to track.
Yeah, totally.
Which was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because like I've, you know, I've like binge listened to loads of albums that I enjoy, but I know what I'm in for.
Like we're talking about Tegan and Sarah,
if you play an album, you know what you're in for, right? Like it's energetic, it's like poppy. So it was cool that it had so much.
And I would just say like the reason I brought those up, those sort of more atmospheric parts, I think that would have been more challenging to the traditional hardcore scene than just like the craziness of it. Because it's like, oh wait, you're going.
That feels more rebellious.
You're creating ambience, and there'd already been a little bit of this throughout the night. I think like the 90s saw a lot of bands experimenting with this, and then a lot of bands experimenting with sort of discordant music. And like those metallic influences, but there's something about this record, like exactly what you're saying, like the way it just shifted and it just sort of really does takes you by surprise at every turn. And just like their patience with those moments, because it is so frantic and like hectic and pandemonium most of this album is, but then like there's still a lot of restraint there, because then they'll just bring it right back and it'll be 4 minutes of,
restraint is a really good word where you're like, oh, it's like it's like half the song or like a really long, and you're like, wow, like I wasn't expecting that at all. But again, it's like that whole thing of unapologetically what they created.
Exactly.
Like, we've got to cut it, or we've got to like, you know, whatever.
I'm seeing where we're up to, like what's next in the story. Are your children okay?
No, but I just heard kids scream, and I'm making sure it's not my children.
Even though they're a few suburbs away.
Well, no, they're like possibly
Chris has come here
driving them around asleep, but they're still asleep.
Did you get dropped off?
Yeah, because they have had like a they've partied a lot, so they're like sleeping in the car.
Yeah, but I just heard
kids scream. I'm like, is that my child?
Oh god.
The joys of motherhood. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah.
So I think so critics love them, but like the scene kind of didn't really know what to do with them. So I've got a quote from writer Fred Pesaro here from Cream magazine. He says, in their time, the band was viewed as too difficult and too complex, a fact that both bothered the quartet and was also used as fuel to troll their audience.
Yeah, right.
Which makes sense. Yeah, yeah. So they have all these like tongue-in-cheek song titles and like weird themes coming through, and they were sort of like, they were mocking, I think, hardcore punk in a way, but like not without a bit of self-awareness.
But that sort of just feeds into the whole thing of like, it's intellectual, or it's like over whatever, when they're like, it's too complex. Yeah. And it's like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, it's a bit annoying. But that,
what does that even mean?
I think that's another thing that carried through to the people who were inspired by them, like those weird ironic song titles, like very long song titles.
Yeah.
Like it kind of all started on this record. Like just
okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because a lot of bands carried that with them after this. Yeah, yeah. It was so it wasn't just the sound, it was like the way they presented themselves and everything. Like people were like, oh, we can
be
dickheads.
Yeah. Oh, we can have fun.
We don't have to be super earnest all the time. We don't have to be super moralistic. We don't have to be, we can just be creative.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
It's amazing how many people, and like everybody I think needs this, but how many people need permission to just like be creative.
Yeah.
Which is
totally.
Why I think when people have the freedom, they like blow up, because you're like, how did you do that?
Yeah.
How did you just create stuff? That's so cool.
Absolutely. I think I've covered everything that I wanted to sort of cover, but I've got a quote from the guitarist Dave Knudsen, I think that's right, which I think is like a nice way to sum it up. He says, with Romans, I was trying to make heavy music without chugging my way through it, the guitarist says, which is, I guess, is like a reaction to like the mosh metal vibe that was really coming to prevalence. Like we did an episode on Earth Crisis, who were equally as influential on that strain of hardcore as these guys were on the crazy noisy side. He says, I started experimenting with pedals and new sounds, and Minus the Bear, the indie rock band that came after, came out of that. At that point in 1999, just having a delay pedal was like, oh my god, I put delay on the song, what does that mean?
Yeah, cool.
And then on those tours I started introducing the Chaos Pad, which was a DJ tool.
Yeah.
So like I think what that says is like the threshold to experimentation was literally just having some guitar pedals.
Yeah, yeah. Just having like a few things.
Yeah, and then that and then he was like, oh, I can do this. And then that just expanded to these crazy, all these like contraptions that made.
It's so funny how people are so passionate and take such ownership over their idea of what something is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what he did. And they're like, that's not
what hardcore. It's meant to yeah,
be.
Yeah.
And it's like he's like, I just like fucked yeah. around with like a few things. Yeah, and they're yeah. like, bullshit. Like it's like crazy.
It's interesting though, because like
it's so funny.
It's funny. Yeah, it is funny because like you see, I think you see bands that are like even sort of further away from the commercial landscape of punk music. Like so bands that are truly underground and they will be using like reverb pedals, they'll be using different effect pedals just to get like a particular sound, but they're yeah. almost like more raw. For whatever, so like what equipment you have almost has no bearing on
the outcome of
what
the
you're
music.
Doing. Because like yeah, I see these bands who are like true DIY bands, and they've got all these like crazy sounds going on, and then you see you know like a real hardcore band, and it's like no hardcore's raw, and it's just like guitar yeah. into amp and blah blah blah, and it's like well.
Yeah, people love rules.
It just depends what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do?
You know, it's so funny too. It's like in the arts, people love rules even more.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, because they're like, because people who aren't in the arts world or don't have any draw to it
yeah, yeah.
are like, oh, those people are so free and creative. Yeah, yeah, and what, yeah. the moment you like scratch the surface, they're like, that's not what it is.
There's all these like it's lines so, drawn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even if they're not discussed, yeah. you only know when they're challenged yeah. and yeah. then people are pissed off.
I was talking
so
about,
funny.
Yeah, it is. It's super... Yes, because like people want you to do, it's weird, people want you to do something new all the time, but they also want you to stay the same. So it's like yeah. you're kind of like boxed into this paradox where it's like if, like especially for a band, it's like if you release an album that sounds the same as your last one, you're like, oh, well, they're not progressing.
Yeah.
But then if you do something brand new, they're like, oh, they've sold out or
if
they're not
the same.
If you stray
too far, they just lose their audience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say. No, it's gone.
Well, that's okay.
Oh, no, I was talking to Jamie about this last week, and it's just been weighing, like, I've just been thinking about it a lot more because, like, we're comparing, like, the gatekeeping aspects of hardcore and punk to that of, like, hip-hop.
Yeah.
I think hip-hop still has all, like, we're actually talking about misogyny in both genres.
Oh, God.
Like, people love to talk about the misogyny in hip-hop, but then we were talking about, like, emo and screamo bands, and it's like, maybe worse in punk music.
You could do, like a series on that.
Yeah, yeah.
That could just be the next chapter to your podcast.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Just, like, who's the most misogynist band?
Who's, yeah, threatened women more.
Yeah, but, like... The lines between subgenres in hip hop, they definitely exist. Like there's definitely like, oh, you know, you got drill rap and you got gangster rap and you got backpack rap and all this sort of stuff. But those lines are almost drawn with a sense of fun in hip hop. I think.
Yeah, like, okay.
Like people who know about hip hop are like, oh, I love all these different types of hip hop. And it's like, yeah, this is this and this is this. And it's so cool.
Oh, right.
Whereas in hardcore,
it's
like, I only like New York hardcore. You
right.
Know?
So it's more like team, like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's more
tribal?
Like, yeah, tribal. Yeah, it's much more tribal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's my
impression.
Yeah, I
don't know if, I mean,
not,
I don't
I'm
know.
I'm not in the hip-hop scene. I've never actually been in the scene.
I'm
but
way
like,
too white to be in the hip-hop scene. I mean, I love hip-hop, but like, you know, look at me. I'm like a flirt. But like... Yeah, okay, I can see how... I'm surprised that it's so tribal just because...
Yeah.
But, I think it's less, actually, I'm not that surprised.
I think it's less so now because like you've got a new wave of bands coming through that are sort of doing something similar to what Botch were doing. But they seem to be old dudes doing it.
How old are we talking?
No, okay, so a band that I'm thinking of, this band, Fiddlehead, I'm thinking of them mainly because like they're doing something really unique. Almost playing indie rock songs as a hardcore band.
Oh,
like,
cool!
Like,
yeah,
like super super cool, super melodic, very like emo, I guess.
Yeah,
but they're singer. They're all old dudes. They've all been in bands over the last 20 years, basically.
Yeah, cool.
And the singer was in a huge straight edge hardcore band called Have Heart.
Okay.
Who were just like the banner holders for straight edge hardcore for so long. A Boston band, like super super legit. Yeah, everyone loved Have Heart.
So you were saying, so Fiddlehead, this band, they're like been all musos in different bands 20 years.
Yeah, true so hardcore dudes, like legit true, hardcore yeah. dudes. So and now they're coming out and like
challenging it by
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But well, do you think that's an age thing? They've done it for so long that they're like, we can just like experiment now. We can play and like we're not definitely. So tied in.
Absolutely.
Because maybe the tribal yeah. thing is just young dudes. Not yeah. not just young dudes, but well, like as in younger people who are like...
Yeah.
You know
well,
what I mean?
I think it's going away is what I'm saying. And I think it's like interesting that in 1999, these guys were the young dudes who were trying to push forward.
Yeah.
And now in 2024, it's old guys being like, oh, no, no, no. Let's splinter this. Let's do whatever
let's
we
want.
Let's
dilute it a bit and be a bit more creative and yeah. like a bit more loose.
And I think the younger bands are following that. And yeah. it's interesting that, and I would name a band called Drug Church as another band that is like that, where they're all old hardcore dudes, but they're just doing something brand new and they're maintaining this idea of we are still a punk hardcore band, but we can sound like whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
of thing. And I see that happening a lot now. And the only interesting thing is that it's not new young people coming through that are holding that banner. It's the old guys coming back around yeah. and being like, no, let's do whatever we want.
Well, yeah. they're like, far out. There's a lot more to experiment with.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
they're
yeah.
like, turns out it doesn't matter. We can fuck around.
And it's also like the underground isn't really the underground anymore. Like everything's the underground yeah. now. Like with TikTok. I mean,
everything is and nothing is. Because yeah, exactly, of the yeah. accessibility to everything.
Yeah,
and like,
exactly. So like not... I brought this up, but Khloe Kardashian wearing a Speed shirt on her Instagram kind of thing. I think it was Khloe or Courtney or whoever it was.
They're kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, Speed are just a Sydney hardcore band.
Yeah.
And they're international. They tour and stuff. But Travis Barker from Blink-182 loves them. And now his wife...
loves them.
Ms. Kardashian is wearing their merch on her Instagram.
Yeah, which blows million, them up. Yeah.
50 million fucking people.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. That's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's wild.
So I'm just saying hardcore isn't underground. Well, it is underground, but the underground isn't underground anymore.
I have to say, I feel like the underground... appeal of it was a lot of it for certain people, absolutely. Right? Like I know yeah. for Chris, he loved it like when he was younger.
Because it was a point of difference?
Well, just because it's like the feeling of discovery is really
yeah.
cool.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like to discover something feels good.
Yes.
And you're not going to do that if it's like a top 20 album absolutely. That's played all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, totally.
And this is a weird thing to say, but I remember like wearing a bunch of his shirts when I was pregnant and I was upsetting a lot of hardcore fans because they were all hardcore shirts. But it was like interesting because I would go do a gig like this like fat, young, pregnant woman in like a corpus, yeah, like corpus shirt or like whatever. There was like a church burning on a few of them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And dudes would come up to me and be like, "Fuck, that's such a sick band! Like, how do you?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, it's not mine." But they wanted to talk to you because they would be like, "Oh my god, like yeah. you have that
it's
band, like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
you know who that is."
Tribalism.
And I, yeah. yeah, it's like super.
You're waving your little flag.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like to the point where I remember there was like this is. I don't think you'll care that I'm sharing this. We would go for walks with the kids like during COVID when you couldn't do anything. Yeah. It was like, and there was one other dude who had another same band t-shirt. Mm-hmm. It was like, I don't know if it was like Defeater or like some whatever band yeah. that he loved.
Defeater.
And
toured
they both,
with Defeater.
Yeah, okay. And they both had the same shirt and they literally would walk past each other. And this is not a great medium, a great thing for a podcast, but they do the head nod. Like the guy was like,
sup.
Mate. And I was like, you know him? And he's like, no, he does that because we've got this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, that is so fucking weird.
That's really, yeah, it is kind of cute.
It's super cute.
I feel like that's almost like a more metal thing than it even is like a hardcore
okay.
thing as
yeah,
well.
Because
like metal dudes are all sort of sweethearts, whereas like hardcore guys are like very sort of territorial, I think.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I know I'm generalizing here for anyone listening, but
well,
like, yeah.
In my experience, guys who like this music, and maybe I'm biased because it's my partner, but also you, like they seem to have a very calm energy and then you listen to the music and it's like off the fucking chain.
Yeah, I guess it's catharsis and like an outlet.
You let
stuff.
It out,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's like if
yeah.
you let it out, you can become
yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know.
A little bit. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think I've covered everything I want to cover about this record, but did you have any other like parting thoughts?
Thank you for introducing
Jenny
it to me.
Block.
Yeah. Thanks for introducing it to me.
Yes.
I'm glad I listened to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it more than I thought I would.
Cool.
So
yeah,
thank
yeah.
you.
It is like, yeah, like the whole thing is like an insight into this like microcosm, which I guess you already had through Chris. Like
yeah,
I
but
know
I don't normally
brand new for you, but
no,
yeah.
but I've heard his music, but I haven't sat down and like taken in a whole album.
Considered it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, like sat there and listened to every song and how they play out. It is like a little world in an album, I'll say that. Or that's how it felt
really
for me.
Is, yeah.
As
yeah.
someone who's outside of that world, it feels like you're in a little world.
Oh, there is actually one thing I thought might be relevant. I just wanted to get to some of the other stuff more. But there's a quote about here it is. Someone called it in a review the musical incarnation of millennial anxiety.
Wow.
Fostered, because it's 1999, pre-9/11, fostered by, I don't know what this word means, armchair eschatology.
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 I don't know what that
means. NATO strikes, earthquakes, and proclamations of technological mayhem. So the rest of that makes sense, like 99 and coming up to the millennium.
That could be any day now, these last few years. But yeah.
But the dissonant chords and screeching dyads beget something excruciating yet slapstick.
Yeah, wow.
And that's written in retrospect, obviously, but like...
It's a good like sum up of the album, I guess, if you had no idea.
Before we go, let's find out what that word means?
It's really annoying to hear a word and then just be like, I don't know what it means.
I wanted to do it before we recorded, but...
It is for bright people, I guess.
The part of theology concerned with death, judgment, and the final destiny of the soul and humankind. So I guess, Y2K, everyone was like... Oh, it's the end of days. It's like you had all those movies. Well,
Anxiety.
Had the movie End of Days.
Yeah.
Is it the apocalypse? All this sort of stuff. But yeah, it's interesting to look back on it and be like, oh, this album feels like 1999 in the dystopian sense.
Yeah. It's cool though.
Yeah. It's interesting too. We'll wrap up in 1 second.
No,
but
that's
like,
okay.
The cover of the album is, so remember 1999 it came out. The cover of the album is a aerial view of New York City.
Oh.
And he drew like this sort of black hole with a target over New York City 2 years before.
That's
good. Really interesting. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
No, but it was cool. I would say listen to it if you haven't heard it.
Yeah.
If you feel like raging out and like G-ing yourself up to yell at someone, you can listen to it.
Yeah.
Or just having a super chill afternoon. Maybe just with some edibles or something. I don't know.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Jen.
Thank you.
Find Jen on social media. Follow her. You're putting clips up and stuff.
Yeah, I am now. I'm like...
Whoa. Chuck her some likes. Chuck her some views.
Yeah.
That's our currency.
That's where we're at. Putting clips up.
That's all the bookers care about.
It's such a hurdle. You're like, oh, it's like self-harm. But you do it. It's fun.
Yeah. I'm at ryan.d.sim on Instagram. I run Rat Club. Comedy every
Rat
Monday.
Club.
Yeah. Best most professional show in Sydney.
It's where it's at.
So Rat Club Comedy on Instagram. And follow us, Dead Ramones, on Instagram. Send us any DMs that you want to send us because the complaints department is wide open. If we get any facts wrong, I want to hear from you guys. If you are angry about any of the records I've chosen and the corresponding years, I want to hear about it. I'm interested in connecting with the diehard fans of hardcore punk, because that's the whole point of this fucking podcast.
Hell so, yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Love it.